the premier baseball show in Chicago. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel.
With the bullpen.
And Benintendi in the air, deep to right field, going back, back it goes! It is gone! Benny with a blast here in the sixth, and the Sox strike first. Here we go. 2-2 from Taylor. Got him! Ball game! It was a pitcher's duel. And Benny's solo home run the difference. The Sox win game two of this series, 1-0 over the Giants.
And now the 1-1 to Bush. Hit in the air, deep left field. Going back is Hummel near the wall. That ball's gone.
That's into the Crawford boxes.
And this one heading in the same direction. Back to back. Bush and now Horner.
And the pitch. Swing and a drive deep to right field. It's got a chance. Gone. Three-run homer, Kyle Tucker. Fastball, strike three, call, ball game over. The Cubs have beaten the Houston Astros easily.
It's time for Hit and Run with your host, Matt Spiegel.
Good morning, all. Yeah. All right. It is indeed Hit and Run on a Sunday morning in the absolutely beautiful town of Chicago. Low brass. Hope you are well. I am well. The White Sox win 1-0 because Adrian Hauser has turned into a dude. Is he just having a moment, or has he used a time with a long off season that included the first part of the regular season to tweak enough things and take some tutelage that he's turned into a dude? I don't know. But my goodness, that guy, ERA under 2 in 7 starts. I think it's 1.79, something like that. Good morning, everybody. And the Cubs beat the Astros 12-3 in Houston. These are the games that are pulsing through our baseball bloodstream, in addition to everything else around MLB and the week that was for the Cubs and the Sox, and we will talk about it all morning long with you. Your phone calls and your texts, as you know, not merely welcome, but elemental to the very completion of the broadcast. 312-644-6767. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And a reminder that breaking news, which sometimes does happen on a Sunday morning, on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Join Wildfire Restaurants. They celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories. Sean, were you on the board? Sean Sears, were you on the board when news broke that, I don't think you were, that that Trump had won the election the first time around?
I was not, no.
Yeah, so, but I didn't let it derail my baseball conversation. That's it. I refuse, no matter how big the news is. You know, as we get towards August and we are threatened with needing to become bump and run briefly on a Sunday, that's going to try to derail our baseball conversation. The Bulls draft was not interesting enough for pick and roll to derail Hit and Run today. And the Blackhawks had a nice draft. I'm glad that the Swedish kid fell to them at 3. That works nicely, but we're not going to let dump and chase interfere with Hit and Run this morning.
The We've many iterations of this show, huh?
Oh, there's so many iterations. There's so many sports. I don't know if you're aware, there's a lot of sports. The Cubs and Astros wrap up their series this afternoon in Houston. Pre-game coverage begins at 12:35. First pitch at 1:10 on the Score and the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. So we're here until then. Steve Stone's going to join me at 10:30 to talk about the White Sox and much more. An interesting story in the Sun-Times on Steve Stone by Jeff Agrest. Bruce Levine is going to join us before that at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. We'll check in with Bruce before he begins things over on Marquee, as they also will be getting ready for Cubs and Astros. Aram Layton from Just Baseball, one of the best guys writing and talking about prospects and minor league systems all around. Let's talk to him because he's also Miami-based. Let's talk to him about Sandy Alcantara and a little Edvard Cabrera, if you're so inclined, and what the Cubs might have to give up to get one of those Miami pitchers. And we can obviously bounce around young players and the minors a little bit with Aram. He's terrific. We'll do Team of the Moment coming up. As always, Ron from the South Side is your one-man fan duel. He is your bookie for all Team of the Moment wagers. Get them in there as you decide who is the Team of the Moment. We'll do Blue Pits a little bit later on in the noon hour as part of our bonus hit and run. And we will wish the Cobra rest as he has left this mortal coil and talk about one of the greatest right field arms for one of the better five-tool players of my lifetime. We will discuss all of that along the way on Hit and Run. But it's an interesting moment for the Cubs and the Astros, who pulled off a big trade, of course, in the offseason, and now get to stare each other in the face, having now split the first two games of the series. I want to talk with you, first and foremost, just to reset the parameters, at least for me, on the Kyle Tucker trade being acceptable, okay? Now, it's easy today to look at a dude who had four hits, including a homer, and stole a base, his 20th, and made a real good running catch in right center, and threw a runner out in the first, Isak Paredes, just for fun. It's real good and real easy to sit here and say, oh, it's a good trade for the Cubs. It was real easy yesterday after Cam Smith reached base four times, including this absurd home run. It was real easy yesterday to sit and say, I can't believe they made this freaking deal, and to do all the math and combine the F wars and everything like that. And it was kind of easier to sit there yesterday because the Cubs lost and Tucker got applauded but didn't have a whole lot of offensive production. And Cam Smith did this to a baseball on Friday night. Goodness.
The pitch to Cam Smith, hit high in the air, deep left field. This ball is going to leave the yard.
Second three-run homer of the ball game for Houston. And this is an absolute no-doubt home run from Smith.
Now, Cam is just a beautiful physical baseball specimen. The athleticism, the fluidity, he's already really good in right field. And that power, and then the one last night with a bat flip, just enjoying himself so much. And when Cam said this about homering against the Cubs, it kind of could potentially rub a little salt.
You did have an opportunity to hit a home run against the Cubs. What was that like?
Yeah, that was awesome. That was really cool. That was a really cool moment. I think that's top five on my list.
Yeah. Already top five. It's a short list of top five.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, I bet it's going to stay up there. I bet it's going to stay up there for a good long time for that guy. Good for him. Look, you know the drill. Isak Paredes has 16 homers. Cam Smith now has what, seven? Is he up to seven now, I do believe? And Hayden Wesneski's having Tommy John surgery. Kyle Tucker is here. Here's the thing. Number one, if they are able, the Cubs, to sign Kyle Tucker long-term, having successfully used the trade as an opportunity to woo him, perhaps with the help of the afternoon show's ambitious endeavor, hashtag Operation Woo King Tuck. Perhaps with that help. If they're able to successfully woo him and sign him long-term, the trade is worth it. Period. No matter what they do this year. Because that dude is a top 10 player in the game. He's probably a top 7 hitter in the game. And you're seeing it. And his excellence is one thing. His effect on the entire lineup is another. His effect on Seiya Suzuki right now this year, and you've heard about all season long, is something. His effect in taking pressure and heat off other guys in the lineup is something. So I say that first and foremost. In terms of whether they gave up too much for that trade, as this is an opportunity to reassess it, I want to make sure you know where I stand. If they're able to sign him long term because he's fallen in love with the Ivy and Wrigley and the whole thing, and they keep him, then the trade is worth it, period, because that dude is a superstar and you don't know exactly what Cam Smith is going to end up. And Isak Paredes would not have been doing here what he is doing there, and he won't be there for long. And remember, you got Isak Paredes for Christopher Morel. Think of it like you traded Christopher Morel, and you'd be fine with that. Now, if Kyle Tucker is one and done, and they win a World Series with him as a big part, the trade is worth it. If he's one and done and they make a World Series with him as a big part of it, the trade is worth it. If he's one and done and they make the NLCS with him as a big part of it, that's my last yes. I think it's worth it. Now, that could be borderline for some. Sean, I see you. Is it borderline for you on that one?
I mean, I'd be bummed, but I mean, it'd be hard to say that was a failure of a season, right?
It'd be hard to say it's a failure of a season because of the happenstance of the NLCS. What if the NLCS comes down to something completely unrelated to that dude, and it's 6-7 games, and it's a tiny little margin, and we know what the postseason is? But again, if they sign him, all of the results of this year in a bubble are moot to me. So I want everybody to process that, and I wonder if people agree. Now that you're watching what you're watching, the dude is excellent. He's hitting .291 with a .396 OBP, a .537 slug, 17 doubles, 52 ribs, 61 runs scored, more walks than strikeouts through 82 games played. A reminder that he was one of only four dudes to do that last year. It was him. It was Mookie Betts. It was Stephen Kwan and Luis Arraez. Actually, Arraez might not have done it last year. I think he didn't, because I remember I asked the trivia question a lot in the spring, including to Kyle Tucker, and he knew the answer. Oh, no, it was Juan Soto. That's the fourth. So yeah. Arraez didn't do it last year. It was Soto, and it was Kwan and Mookie and Tucker. That's it. So, I mean, Tucker's outrageous, and you're seeing it. And I'm glad that he had a moment there in Houston. And I'm glad it comes at a time when he's on a real good team. And he got booed. He and the Cubs got booed there after the win on Saturday. Kyle Tucker on what it means to be booed in his former home stadium.
I mean, that's a good thing. That means we're doing our job over here. So, we're going to try and do it again tomorrow. I know, I think Framber's starting tomorrow, so he's a really good pitcher, but we just got to continue build off tonight and, carry that into tomorrow and try and put up good at-bats against him and hopefully come out with a win.
Houston is a good team, man. They're a weird team, but a good team. They're on a 96-win pace, just like the Cubs are right now. They won 12 out of 15 coming into this series. They've now won 13 out of 16. They are 18-7 in June, and without Yordan Alvarez, who hasn't taken an at-bat since May 2nd and is an unbelievably great hitter, they are 33-19 without Yordan Alvarez. It's crazy. They're getting it done in really creative, interesting ways. You saw Cam Smith hitting cleanup for them. It's a dude who's played 32 minor league games. And how about this? Joe Espada of the Astros, this is on Thursday. I got to check the two lineups from Friday and Saturday. But as of Thursday, he had used 76 different lineups for 80 games. Houston is just piecing it together, playing matchups, finding hot hands, moving guys around, and finding ways to do it. But that is a good team. But guess what? The Cubs are too. I want to talk with you about Craig Counsell and his steady hand. And we're going to get into that in the next segment. But we're going to throw open the phone lines. And I want to know what you think of the Kyle Tucker trade parameters as I threw out there. Want to know your thoughts on that at 312-644-6767. You can text as well to that number. And soon I'll be able to see your texts. I can't right now because of a ghost in the machine, but we'll get that ghost out of here at some point. The White Sox have turned a corner as an organization. Folks, I've been the guy telling you that now for, what, a month? And I started with, like, look, they've turned a soft corner. No, it's obvious they've turned a corner. And it's not just you know, the fact that they're winning a few more games on the field and you're seeing more players of consequence on the field. It's the other stuff that we're learning and hearing. You'll hear from Ryan Fuller at some point during this show. He was on with our Bruce Levine yesterday on Inside the Clubhouse, and David Haw, of course. And we know that Brian Bannister is really, really good and really smart at his job, and so is Ryan Fuller. I got to give Brian Bannister props for the Grant Taylor plan. The Grant Taylor plan, I like it. It threw some people off when he was removed from being a starter in the minors. But Grant Taylor, who has just an absolutely beastly arm, is now here in the big leagues. And yes, he's a closer on a bad team. But what's happening is Grant Taylor is learning how to be a big league pitcher while using the very, the very tenuous amount of bullets in that howitzer of an arm in the big leagues. He's not using them in the minors, those bullets. He's learning and growing and building confidence in the big leagues and getting to pitch in big situations, you know, relatively speaking, as he did yesterday with the two-inning save, two innings, two Ks, following up on Adrian Hauser. And if you've been watching the White Sox at all this year, you've known that they can't finish games. They have not had anybody in the back of that bullpen to help them finish games. So now that you can, you finish a game like that, a 1-0 win, where there's a bunch of different stuff that was good. Edgar Caro with a defensive play on a back pick, getting a runner at third base for a double play after a strikeout. Stuff like that. You know, like you're seeing some good defense, some good pitching, and some young players that actually matter, a few and more by the moment, getting a chance to feel success and validation. And Grant Taylor is helping you do that by finishing games like he did yesterday. So count me as officially in on appreciating Brian Bannister's Grant Taylor plan. All right, it's Hit and Run. Bruce Levine and Steve Stone next hour. More of me with lots and lots of you at 312-644-6767. And we'll talk about Craig Counsell's steady hand with some sound from earlier in the week that I need to make sure that you heard. It's Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
And the 3-2. Fly ball, deep left field, trouble all the way back, and long gone.
You know, they hit a big two-run homer, gave themselves the lead, and I thought, you know, the fact that, you know, we had a great inning, and obviously that's a big deal, but then Colin came out and put zeros up, and that kind of, like, squashes the game too from a momentum standpoint as much as anything. When he puts up a zero in the fourth, I think that is a big inning, right? So we did a nice job, had our big offensive inning, and did a great job with the bullpen and Colin.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel Sunday mornings on The Score.
670 The Score is where you are. It is Matt Spiegel and Hit and Run with you. Bunch of texters getting in on the conversation. Here's one. Tucker has to be signed. Has to be signed. Also, no extension. Jed cannot stay. Well, I'm not sure that's going to be a factor if they win a World Series or make a World Series without Tucker or with Tucker and he doesn't sign. Then no. Jed will still be able to stay. The trade was worth it even if the Cubs don't sign Tucker, says a texter. I think, look, if they make the World Series or win the World Series, certainly. And to me, if they make the NLDS, I think still. Here's another. There have been some people on The Score trying to say Isak Paredes is comparable to Tucker based on his stats this year. That is proof that stats are deceiving. Paredes isn't in the same area code as Tucker as a baseball player. No, he is not. He is not. Paredes is a good hitter. He's a really good pull hitter and a really good pull hitter in the air. And you've seen it. And it works really well in Tampa. And it didn't work that well here. And there might have been some personal discomfort involved last year when his OPS was under 700 after the trade. But it's working really well in Houston. Another great ballpark for him. This texter, I've never liked how frivolous Hoyer and Epstein were and are with their best prospects. As far as acquiring rental players that they know they're not going to sign, the elite front offices like LA's don't deplete their entire farm system that way. In fact, they're always on the lookout to acquire an elite prospect like Jackson Ferris for a backup infielder. Okay, so that's a reference to the Michael Busch trade. Michael Busch with an OPS of 878 right now. Jackson Ferris may eventually be a major league dude, as may be the outfielder. What's the outfielder's name? I always forget his name.
Zahir Hope, I believe.
Zahir Hope, thank you. Zahir Hope. But, you know, Michael Busch is killing it right now. They had a few. They had Miguel Vargas, too. The Dodgers just had a bunch of dudes. You want to be the farm system that develops a bunch of dudes so you can do that stuff. But that's a flip side kind of trade. I love the aggressiveness of going for the Kyle Tucker move. And there is no guarantee that the rest of this lineup is functioning the way it is without Kyle Tucker. 312-644-6767. I told you I was going to get to some Craig Council, but let's get to some phone calls first. Elgin Clue, nicknamed for Ted Klazuski with the biceps and the cutoff sleeves to match. What do you say, Clue? How are you?
If you only knew how that relationship started, I'd let you know someday.
Please.
Anyway, so, not now. What I want to talk about is Craig's handling of Ben Brown and Cade Horton. And the non-competitive pitch issue that Ben Brown seems to have. But earlier this week, there was the week of the game with Mazurowski and Skeens.
Yeah.
And if you didn't know any better, you would think that Mazurowski was the stud because Skeens, you know, was throwing a lot of non-competitive pitches in the 100-mile-an-hour range. And there's an adage from pitching coach standpoints is that nobody cares how fast you throw ball four. And it seems to be the issues that Ben was having. He's throwing a lot of pitches that would get the pitch count up. His stuff is really good. And I just, you know, they did send Ben Brown down. It was frustrating to see happen on his behalf. I also had him on my fantasy team, which was frustrating. But also have Cade Horton, which is cool. But anyway, Cade Horton is like, Council just kind of wrote it off on Friday night and said, well, this is what happens in competitive baseball. Cade Horton's performance was basically he had a rough outing, but a lot of his pitches had purpose to him. And I was just wondering if you wanted to address that in Council.
Yeah, you know, thanks, Clue. The Ben Brown thing is frustrating. He doesn't seem to believe in his changeup very much. He's been using it some towards the, especially towards the latter portion of his starts. It's just not that good. So there's still really no third pitch, which means he's got to be absolutely on point. And non-competitive pitches, meaning 0-2, 1-2, he's way outside the zone looking for chase and not getting it. I understand why they sent him to the minors. I would have had him in the pen and just let him focus on the two pitches and use the swing and miss stuff, but maybe because they've got Porter Hodge back and because they just feel real good about their pen right now. With good reason. They sent Ben Brown to try and figure some stuff out. I thought the approach with Cade was good. He was left out there to wear it. I mean, he didn't give up the runs in each inning, but, man, he could have. He got saved in the first, saved in the second. Horton was in trouble in every single inning of his outing on Friday night. And Council said he's got to learn from atmospheres like that. That atmosphere is the real deal in Houston. Hyped up for sure. So I'm cool with it. Here's the thing about Council, and I want to play you a couple pieces from our conversation with him earlier in the week on Spiegel and Holmes. He is so unbelievably steady. That's just what he is and how he functions. It doesn't mean as a leader that he will automatically make the players like that, but it does give him an opportunity to lead by example. We've got a couple moments this week. Super impressive bounce back moments for the Cubs. You lose that one on Friday and you're down 2-0 last night, like Council talked about in the cut you have coming back. And then they explode. They explode for all those runs and end up winning in a laugher 12-3. That is a very, very good sign. Earlier in the week, after the two losses in the first two games in St. Louis, before they came back and won the next two with Boyd and Imanaga and some timely hitting and some good defense. We talked to Craig right after that second loss. A lot of anxiety among the fans, and I asked him if there was anxiety with him. Anxiety is growing within a clubhouse. Like when, you know, do you have an anxiety thermometer? Or like, do you walk around, like, wonder, you know, checking in on that kind of thing? How does it concern you in that regard?
No.
No, Okay, but you know humans, you are one. Like, anxiety can show up and rise, and it can affect people. Are you worried about your guys getting anxious when, you know, a couple games under 500 for the month, three other teams playing real well in the division, you know, losing a game like that?
No.
How good is it for a player that's been doing everything else that he can to help you try to win to know that he got the ball up in the air and got it out of the ballpark?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a player who flirted with zero many years in his career, just not having zero there makes you feel pretty good.
Flirted with zero. Was it a romantic kind of flirting? I mean,
that's anxiety, Spiegs. You know what I mean? Like, that's anxiety.
I got it.
This other stuff, not anxiety.
No, okay. Well, that's good.
Well, there's 80 more games to be played. So there's, you know, there's not a lot of anxiety that you have to necessarily. We're probably more anxious. People who are Cubs fans, people who are Cubs observers might be more anxious about this than the actual clubhouse.
But the thing is, like, the anxiety, I love hearing that it's a no. Because even for fans, this is what you want, Craig. Like, you want to have a good team going through a baseball season. I mean, the Mets just lost 9 of 10. The Yankees lost 9 of 12. This stuff happens worse than it's even happening for the Cubs, right? This is baseball that's happening right now.
Yeah, it's a season, and if you sign up to be a baseball fan, the great part about signing up as a baseball fan and the great part about baseball seasons are it's a ride and it's a roller coaster, and it means you're built to withstand the ups and the downs, and that's what you should love about baseball. It really is, that you're willing to kind of take that ride of all the ups and downs of a season, and the journey of it. That's the greatest part about our sport, and you got to survive that, and you got to thrive in it. It's the fun and beauty of our sport.
I love that answer from Craig Counsell, because he doesn't have the anxiety, and then he's talking about zero home runs there, his flirtation with zero home runs, because at the time, Nico had just hit his first. Now Nico's exploding. He's chasing down the big dumper. He's got three. So, you know, but Craig's answer there at the end about the beauty of the anxiety and the roller coaster. Folks, you know, you've heard me talk about it. That's what you sign up for. That's what you want. That's why you love this sport, because there's games of consequence playing in June and you're scoreboard watching and you're seeing that Milwaukee's just two games back. You're wondering if the Reds are putting it together and feeling the Francona effect. Even though you survived with the split in St. Louis, you got a little more fear about whether that thing is for real. You want to go out and get more pieces because you know you're not quite great enough, because it's a baseball season. And even when you're real good, you're not quite great enough. That's fun. That's why we're into it. The companion sport, man. Every day, wherever you're sitting, raise your hand if you woke up and looked at box scores today. Raise your hand if you woke up and looked at standings today. If you set a fantasy lineup, you know, if you looked at streaming starting pitchers and thought about picking dudes up, you know, every day, there's nothing like it. So that's what you want. So I love that Counsell doesn't have the anxiety. The short answers of no at the beginning are amazing. That's him. He's steady. He's that guy. And he can lead that way by example, by just being that steady guy. Some players have that. Some do not. The more players that you have that are calm like that, to that level, the better off you are. But not everybody will. The managers must. They absolutely must. And Counsell's got it in spades. 312-644-6767 is the phone number. Phone lines are open if you want to hop in. Let's talk to Phil in Lombard on 670 The Score on Hit and Run. Good morning, Phil. What's going on?
Good morning, Matt. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Just wanted to chime in on a couple things regarding the Cubs. First of all, I agree with the Kyle Tucker situation. If we could go ahead and sign him, I really don't care like how good Cam Smith and Esoc Greatest does. In fact, other than when they play the Cubs, I am rooting like heck for them to do well, because I think that puts more pressure on the Cubs front office. Them two guys continue to produce. I think it puts a lot more pressure on the Cubs to go ahead and sign Michael Tucker long term.
Let's pause for a second there, and we'll get more of your phone call. But Kyle Tucker, not Michael. I remember Michael. He's a pretty good outfielder. But I agree with rooting for them to do well because it puts pressure. It also makes other teams more desirous to trade with you. Like, you know, so maybe you can get an Alcantara for an Alcantara instead of having to give up an Owen Casey because they're like, well, their guys do well. You know, I mean, that kind of thing. You want your prospects to do well elsewhere. All right. Keep going, Phil.
Great. And one more point. I think that in order to push this team to the next level, I think all of their top 100 prospects, including Cade Horton, Ben Brown, and even Matt Schaub, need to be made available at the trade deadline. I don't think any of them should be off the table in making this team better to not only get into the playoffs, but maybe, you know, go for the ultimate prize. I want to know what you think.
Interesting. Yeah, Ben Brown certainly is going to be available because they're going to add another starting pitcher. And Colin Ray is going to become that depth. And hopefully at some point you got Jordan Wicks. Maybe Chris Flexen could be that depth. Ben Brown is certainly somebody who's going to get bandied about in conversation. And he might go and figure it out somewhere else. Maybe they'll teach him a splitter, you know, the way San Diego did with Jeremiah Estrada. And all of a sudden, Ben Brown has a splitter that looks like the fastball to go with that curve, and he's filthy. I wonder if they've tried that, by the way. Including Matt Schaub in possible trade conversations is interesting. Better get a third baseman back. Better be picking up a third baseman. If you're going to go out and get Eugenio Suarez and Matt Schaub is going to be part of that deal, I'll live with that. You gotta get better and more powerful against left-handed pitching. And you've got trouble with that. And Council's lineup against lefties is certainly open for conversation. The Dansby spot obviously is a point of contention for a lot of people. We can get into it at some point. But either way, I don't like including Horton in thoughts. If you're including Horton, then you can't be including Ben Brown, and you better feel good about your Ben Brown plan. Because you need a young arm who you can lean on. We all need somebody to lean on. 312-644-6767 is the number. Let's go to Ben in Queens on 670 The Score. Ben, you're on Hit and Run. Good morning on a Sunday. What's happening, dude?
Can I lower my hand now?
Yes.
I raised my hand on all of those. Can I lower it? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. It's good exercise. All right. So I want to agree with you as far as the parameters of what would happen with Kyle Tucker. And I don't want to put words in your mouth. So maybe you might want to reset it. If they make it to the NLCS and lose and he doesn't sign, you'd still be okay with that, right?
If they make it to the NLCS and lose and he doesn't sign, would I be okay with that? I think I would. Yes, that's my last yes. And just, okay. I got to say, the soft factors are part of that for me. Like whatever light bulb was turned on for Saya because of Tucker being here and the more aggression earlier in the count and the more aggression in hitters counts, I think that's going to last. And Tucker's going to get some responsibility for that. The ability for PCA to bloom as a power hitter lower in the lineup and lower in expectations because Tucker is here. That is a soft factor that I think is going to linger. So, but I believe in that stuff more than others. But yes, I'm a yes on your situation, sir.
Okay. So I agree with you, but I have two caveats to agree with you. One is that the NL is by far superior this year. If we play out your thought process, you'll have lost to the NLCS to, you know, the Dodgers, who are going on to win yet another World Series, or you're losing maybe to the Phillies, that Phillies team that finally breaks through and wins it all. You know, you've had a damn good season, and if you got there, you know, your team is going for it. That's the best part about the season. They're going for it. And the other reason why I wouldn't be so bad about it is because, man, next year the free agent market is going to be the weirdest free agent market that we've seen in years with everything that's coming up with the work stoppage and with the contracts. Nobody knows, you know, but I am, as you know, a volunteer for the Woo Kyle Tucker campaign here in the Mid-Atlantic. And we're going to keep up our work. Love you, Steve. Go Cubs, go.
Thank you so much, Ben. Operation Woo King Tuck. I got to be honest. It's a clunky hashtag. I understand. Hashtag Operation Woo King Tuck. I mean, OWKT, no, that doesn't work. We clearly need a theme song. We need a marketing campaign. There's a lot of stuff that's going on that we need. We'll sort it out. Spiegel and Holmes is where you can really hear Operation Woo King Tuck being fleshed out Monday through Friday, 2 to 6, because we've got some big ideas. My favorite idea so far for Operation Woo King Tuck is to show up at his house or maybe the ballpark with $600 million in six different Sprinter vans, each van holding 100 bags, duffel bags, each with $1 million in it. This is our grand gesture. It's our wacky radio bit as a gesture. We've done the math and figured out how many vans we need, how heavy the money is, how much will fit in a bag.
It's quite the undertaking, man. Jeez.
Yeah. All we need now is the $600 million. So okay. if you're willing to contribute or have any ideas in this, please feel free to reach me on Twitter at Matt Spiegs, S-P-I-E-G-S, hashtag Operation Woo King Tuck. We'll come back and take more of your phone calls. Bruce Levine next hour, Steve Stone next hour, Team of the Moment coming up, Blue Pits coming up. So much to do, so much to say on a Dave Matthews Band weekend at Northerly Ireland. It's 670 The Score. It's Hit and Run. Spiegs with you. You know
I
was Chicago
bound. I want him to learn how to bunt.
It's another tool in the toolbox, kind of what we talk about. And he needs to have that tool, whether he uses it during that week or not. It's always in there. But he is practicing it, and he knows that it's a skill that he has to continue to hone in on. And it's also a tool that he can use for his advantage. And keeping a third baseman a little bit closer to the line or pulling a first baseman a little bit closer with the runner on second and opening that hole. And a lot of times it just ends up being something that happens naturally after a pitch, and you're like, oh, I saw that one pretty good. I think that guy might be a little deep. And it's not planned. You don't go up there thinking, I'm going to bunt this at bat, but being able to switch that light on really quick and be like, oh, it's open. I'm going to do it, and I have the ability to.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
That is Dustin Kelly, the Cubs hitting coach. He was on Inside the Clubhouse yesterday. We'll talk to Bruce Levine at the top of the hour about that conversation and much, much more. In the meantime, it's 670 The Score. It is Spiegs here with you. Let's talk to Scott in Chicago. Take a couple of callers as we round out hour number one. Lots of your texts coming in as well. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I love your show, and I love what you talked about in the last segment about looking at the scoreboard every day, checking the standings. I mean, I'm in my late 50s, and that's all I do. And because I love baseball, and I'll tell you, I love this team. I love the Cubs. I'm confident in Craig Counsell. I'm worried about the Brewers. I'm worried about their depth, their starting pitching. I was at the game Wednesday when Skeens pitched in Milwaukee and Mizorowski was lights out. I think that their starting pitching and their relief pitching is stronger than the Cubs. I think the Cubs are a stronger offensive team. And I just wanted your thoughts on that. But I'll tell you, it's just great. It's great to be competitive. It's great to be these games being meaningful. Love your show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. On the last point, it's like, you remember, in April, we started to think, you know what? This could be a pretty good summer. This could be kind of a fun summer. This is it. You're in the middle of that now. So even when there's anxiety and you're angry or you're feisty or you're discouraged or whatever, just remember, you're in the middle of that right now. Good reason to worry about Milwaukee. That's a very smart organization with a really good, loose manager and a bunch of young talent that is playing pretty well. Pat Murphy said the other day, this is the land of opportunity. And he's talking about young players coming to Milwaukee and getting a chance to do what they do. Joey Ortiz keeps getting chances. And after what, three homers in his first 70-some games, he's now homered three times in the last four games. Quinn Priester wasn't getting chances other places. Now he's here. What are you, 11 Ks and seven shutout innings yesterday? My goodness. So, yeah, you should worry about Milwaukee. The whole division. There's three teams in the division that are showing you there is some reason to worry about them. St. Louis, the least of all three, in my opinion. The Reds are having a moment. They're not the team of the moment, but they're having a moment. And we'll talk about them a little bit later on, too. But yeah, lots of reason for concern, but that means attention. And that means your companion in full force all summer long. Owen is in Willowbrook on 670 The Score. What do you say, Owen?
Hi, Spiegs. Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Hey, you know, a couple months ago, A.J. Pierzynski said the Sox just don't develop position players. And I, as a microcosm, I've looked at their draft choices since Williams and Hahn took over from 2002 to when they left. And they basically had two major leaguers stick from their number one draft picks. And I know you mentioned the Sox have some young talent, and maybe they've turned a corner. Why have they not been able to develop position players? I mean, they've gotten, you know, Crochet. Obviously, they had Chris Sale. They've done okay with some pitchers. Uh-huh. Why cannot they how come they can't develop position players?
Well, you've got to look at this regime now with Ryan Fuller and Brian Bannister and Paul Janish under a different microscope. You've got to separate it from the Williams years and even the Hahn years. And Hahn tried to pull them forward, and he brought in Nick Hostetler, replacing, among others, Buddy Bell and other people that had been here with more of an old-school approach. Slowly and churningly, the organization has moved forward and is now looking at the kinds of things that really help you project position players much better than the kind of things they used to look for. Because they used to look with principally the scout's eye and the athleticism. And that has to be a part of it. But you need to look at some of the basics in terms of swing plane and exit velocity and bat speed and, you know, some of the basic analytics that are just really quantifiable scouting and make your life easier. And you've got to have a bulked up amateur scouting department and a really good R&D department that's well interweaved and interwoven, I should say, with your scouting and development. And now they slowly have that. So don't worry about all those years where you got frustrated. I know you feel it, but if you can pay attention to the new hires and the new methodology, you can start to think about it. Now, that said, we haven't seen a lot of dudes that they've drafted, but they have gone out and traded for some with what seems to be a pretty good eye. Edgar Caro, Kyle Teal, and Braden Montgomery, and to a lesser extent, Chase Mydroth, you know, guys like that who they've traded for, give you a little hope. And there's some other position players. William Bergola, the shortstop, they got from Philly in the Jordan Danks. Yeah, it is. It's not John Danks. In that trade. Tanner Banks, that's funny. I thought Banks and Danks. The Tanner Banks trade. So Bergola, like, there's some people. There's some guys. You need more. You need plenty more. But lose the last 25, 30 years of your scouting and development life and think about what's happening now, because they're finally being given a chance to do something about it. And while the team on the big league level absolutely sucks, for the most part, there are some people that you can put your hopes on and some systems you can put your hopes on as well. It's 670 The Score. Thanks for all the texts coming in. Here's one. Speaks have not heard your son the last couple Sundays. Is he not going to be a producer? I don't think that's in his future, at least not right now. No. He chose a sleepover and some other stuff today. I can't necessarily fault him for that. Sean, you're on your own.
That's fine. I mean, let him have his sleepover. It's okay.
I know, right? He's 13. 670 The Score is where you are. It's Hit and Run. Let's talk to Bruce Levine and Steve Stone next hour. And we'll get Team of the Moment in about an hour from now. Keep it right here on Hit and Run.